bombshell development buried deep in the House Armed Services Committee's draft for the fiscal year 2027 National Defense Authorization Act, Section 224 establishes the so-called United States-Israel Defense Technology Cooperation Initiative. It demands the Secretary of Defense appoint a dedicated executive agent to synchronize U.S. and Israeli efforts across artificial intelligence, cyber operations, biotechnology, quantum computing, autonomous systems, directed energy weapons, and missile tech. This isn't a partnership. It's a technocratic fusion with calls for bilateral R&D, co-production of weapons, joint ventures, licensing deals, network integration, and full data fusion. American military secrets could soon flow directly to the IDF. This initiative builds on decades of over $200 billion in U.S. taxpayer support to Israel, but takes it to unprecedented levels by embedding Israeli influence directly into the Pentagon's decision-making and industrial base, creating co-production facilities on U.S. soil, generating jobs that lock in congressional support while handing Israel leverage over American defense priorities. Data sharing and network integration raise massive red flags for espionage risks and the loss of strategic autonomy. Transparent American oversight would be a relic of the past.
They're taking it off budget and nesting it inside the classified ledgers of the Pentagon, which last time I checked, if you add it all up, there's over $15 trillion been stolen or disappeared starting in the mid-1990s until now. And of course, they just failed their audit again. In it, and I've got the subsections here, it says that Israel's funding and military operations will just go into the classified divisions of the Pentagon, and then through those mechanisms, you don't even know how much money they're going to get. And they're calling it partnership with Israel on weapons and so and security so and intelligence. So that's why Netanyahu's like, hey, we want to wean ourselves off of Washington. Oh, Israel's going to get off our tit. Nope, sorry. Israel is going to literally slice us open and crawl inside our belly and just feed inside our stomach itself at point blank range. So Israel's not going to just be hanging off the hind tit now. Israel's going to, like a face sucker, plant an egg in our stomach, and then it just feeds inside our stomach till it grows up to a big enough level, and then boom, 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 punches its way out and comes out and says, here's Johnny.
As this technocratic fusion advances, it will further enforce Israel's reach into suppressing American dissent amid a wave of new laws and the outsized role of dual citizens in rewriting the rules of our Constitution. With anti-BDS measures already embedded in numerous state contracts and federal proposals, and broader efforts to equate criticism of Israeli policy with anti-Semitism gaining traction, this deepened military-industrial integration creates powerful new levers. What begins as cooperation risks becoming a framework where questioning Section 224 itself triggers accelerating the criminalization of dissent under the guise of national security. Most of us assumed America First meant no secret mergers, especially mergers undermining the military and the will of we the people. Section 224 must be ripped out of the 2027 NDAA post-haste. John Baum reporting for the Alex Jones Network.
Thank you. much work goes into this, and it's all funded by you going to thealexjonesstore.com. So this is a fundraiser time right now. We need to be raising funds. We get to the next stage of our, you know, rocket trip. We've shed one booster, and now the new one's firing up, and we need you to fill our tank and give us the fuel to get to that next level. So please do go to thealexjonesstore.com. There is a mega sale going on right now. You're getting 40% off methylene blue tincture, methylene blue caps, Ultra DNA Revival, Shilajit caps and gummies, up to 35% off methylene red tincture, colostrum, and MK Ultra, and you're getting 30% off all apparel, shirts, hats, hoodies, and everything else. You know, what we sell you at thealexjonesstore.com are just like these amazing naturally occurring vitamins, minerals, supplements, just CMOS and Shilajit. It just is like God's gift to humanity. At some point, humanity discovers it. And get it at thealexjonesstore.com.
You're watching The War Room with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now on X.com. Annihilate.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. This is War Room Live. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, coming to you live on this first day of June 2026. Hope everybody's doing well. We got, of course, big weekend full of news to go over. Major developments in the Iran war. But, you know, I mean, what I should probably do would save us all a lot of time. I could record about 10 or 15 minutes, and we could just play it every Monday morning, right? I could do 10 or 15 minutes where I go, last Friday, there was talk of a ceasefire. It was looking like it was all about to come to a peaceful conclusion. And then Israel started bombing Lebanon, and then Trump backed out of the deal. And now we're right back to square one. If you play square one slightly behind square zero, which existed before we started this war. I could do about a 10 or 15 minute little, you know, keep it a little bit vague, keep the details a little bit, you know, inexact, and we just play it every Monday morning because we're in Groundhog's Day hell world, essentially. So we're going to go over what has unfolded with Iran, Israel, and America. It's not that complicated. It's nothing new. It is the same thing that's happened over and over and over again for the last 93 days of the Iran war. It's Israel tricking us into a conflict and then making sure that we cannot get out of it for the life of us. And the way in which they're guaranteeing that we stay in the conflict is by having, well, they're just killing Lebanese people by the thousands. That's essentially it. That's the entire conflict in a nutshell. And I got a lot of videos to get to today from a lot of topics. A lot of them are a little bit longer. I'm still going to try to get to them. Because in addition to everything going on with Iran, and I'll try desperately against all odds to actually lay out an efficient timeline for you as to what exactly happened with Iran. But also we need to, of course, talk about what everybody over the weekend seemed to start to understand. Yet we've been reporting on this for several years now at this point, and that is the wholesale collaboration, merging, essentially, of Israel and American militaries. Now, we've been talking about this for a long time, certainly ever since Tom Alexandrovich, the head of the Cyberdome security program in Israel, got arrested for trying to meet up with an underage girl here in Las Vegas and then was let go by the Israeli-born judge that just let go Ori Solomon, the Israeli citizen who was caught creating a lab. Because when Tom Alexandrovich was arrested, we started looking into who he was, what his position was, and he was the international liaison for the digital dome system that Israel was trying to sell to NATO, Five Eyes, Germany, and other European countries. And this, you know, I thought that's where it would stay for a while. They've gotten more ambitious, but essentially the digital dome program was folding the cybersecurity for the nation of America or Germany or England or any of the Five Eye countries into the security umbrella of Israel. And this is extremely troubling. Well, now they're codifying it. They have a congressional bill put forward to solidify and actually literally merge the Israeli and American militaries, which is just insane. But it's not in any way exclusive to America. This is actually happening in European countries all over the world. So again, I'm glad people are recognizing this. I'm hoping that it's not too late to throw the brakes on and stop this from happening. I do think everybody listening to my voice should probably be calling your congressman and telling them that you're not happy with the new addendum to the NDAA, Section 224. And we'll get into that. Again, I'm glad people are doing investigations into this and finding the exact ways that this merger is taking place. But this has been a very, very long time coming, and it has to do with not just the military, but the technology that our military operates on, and the way in which Israel already has essentially embedded itself in our big tech companies like Palantir, which is serving as the foundational operating system for so much of our military. It's already happened more or less through the corporate side. Now they're just trying to codify it. But it's a lot deeper than even people realize. And again, it's happening in every European nation simultaneously. So this from Tony Saruga, Deep Dive, The Quiet Coup Inside the NDAA. The Responsible Statecraft piece has put its fingers on something genuinely significant. And the fact that this is happening inside a must-pass $1.15 trillion defense bill buried at Section 224 tells you everything you need to know about how the permanent national security apparatus operates when it wants to avoid a public fight. What Section 224 actually does. This isn't a tweak. Section 224, titled the United States-Israel Defense Technology Cooperation Initiative, is a structural rewiring of the U.S.-Israel military relationships. The provision authorizes $150 million annually, but the money is almost besides the point. What matters is the architecture it builds. Bilateral R&D, so bilateral research and development across AI, quantum computing, autonomous systems, directed energy, cyber biotech, counter-drone system, and missile defense, co-production and joint ventures with Israeli defense firms on U.S. soil, licensing agreements that embed Israeli-origin intellectual property into Pentagon programs of record, network integration and data fusion, which means U.S. military data flowing into Israeli systems and vice versa, pathways from R&D straight into procurement, bypassing the normal foreign aid oversight channels. The key phrase in this legislative text is technologies are to be identified for integration into United States systems and programs of record. That's not foreign aid. That's making Israeli defense tech a backbone of the Israeli military. And of course, what is the quote that Alex always references? It's when the head of the ADL, Jonathan Greenblatt, giving a presentation to the Israeli Knesset, says we must use the genius like we used in blowing up the pagers to destroy Hezbollah. In our war, in our Eighth Front war, which is a war against the New Rome, which is America. And so do you think it's a smart idea to give the people who used their hijacking of a supply chain to take over the technological supply lines of their enemies and then use them to blow up their enemies? Do you think it's smart to put those exact people in charge, essentially, of our military supply lines? Again, it feels absurd to argue any of this. It's just an attack. It's just an attack. I swear to God, I feel like I have to get up here and be like, imagine being, a person during the Blitz in World War II in Britain, having to get up and be like, I think we're under attack. Guys, we're being bombed continuously. Germany is bombing us a lot. I think they're our enemy, and I don't think we should trust them. And then having a bunch of people in the UK being like, oh, shut up, fearmonger, anti-Germanist. It's crazy. It's crazy. That's pretty much where we're at now. What's happening with this Section 224 is the equivalent of a bombing raid against the United States, only it's significantly more damaging, but a very similar attack on our sovereignty, just, happening digitally rather than physically. Here's Jonathan Greenblatt talking to the Israeli Knesset, using the pronoun we, as he talks about how we must end a war, wage this war, not just on the battlefields, but just as importantly, on the internet as well. Let's watch.
We've got to start doing things differently. And the same goes here in Israel. This means that the problem won't be solved by yet another new Knesset task force. It won't be solved by the government just throwing money at the problem. It won't be solved by the IDF spokesperson's unit issuing updated talking points or suddenly using TikTok. like us in America, you need to adopt new strategies, to experiment with creative tactics, to study the results and scale what works. Maybe it's a whole new IDF unit, call it 8300, to lead this fight. But we need the kind of genius that manufactured Apollo gold pagers and infiltrated Hezbollah for over a decade to prepare for this battle. We need the kind of courage that executed Operation Deep Layer inside Syria and destroyed Iranian missile manufacturing capabilities to undertake this mission. This is the kind of ingenuity and inventiveness that have always been a hallmark of the State of Israel, that have always been a characteristic of the Jewish people. I know we can do it.
We, right? We can do it. We, the Israelis, he says, cosplaying as an American, as he serves on as the head of the unelected Jewish Oversight Board, the ADL, who has, by the way, basically had veto power over anything getting published in America since at least the 1950s. Remember, they've been around since 1913, coincidentally enough. So again, you know, one of the things, like the guy Alex was interviewing, Handsome Truth, there are like a lot of these people. You have to like really understand this. You have to really study this stuff. And one of the things when you actually study this stuff that you come to understand is that the current situation is absolutely in no way new. We have been under essentially the same regime for 100 years. If you're going to overthrow a century-old, you know, banking cabal that runs the world, you're not going to do it by yelling at people on the street. That's just not the effective strategy here. You have to understand who it is you're dealing with. And it's one of the funny things that I find with people that, you know, have yelled at me for 9 years, calling me a Jewish agent or something, because I'm strategically more intelligent than them. They can't comprehend the angles I'm taking. Is it's like you study the Jews 12 hours a day, 7 days a week for 10 years, and you didn't pick up any tips? You didn't figure out what it was about their strategy that's been so successful this whole time? You're convinced that they are running a 3,000-year-old global, you know, conquering strategy, and you think to defeat them, you should yell on the internet. You think that's the thing? That's going to solve the problem, really? It's not. It's a step towards solving the problem. Under the Pentagon procurement model, this is back to the post by Tony Saruga, funding moves through budget justification documents and program element descriptions. Oversight is limited to cost readiness and capability, bureaucratic criteria. The relationship gets evaluated like any other weapons program, not as a strategic political commitment, no diplomatic strings attached. As Responsible Statecraft notes, this would give Israel a, quote, higher level of military-industrial integration than the U.S. has with any other country in the world, including NATO allies. Not even Five Eyes partners have this kind of embedded access to U.S. defense procurement. And again, if you think that is troubling, that's happening here in America, what about this? Military cooperation of the Netherlands with Israel is inappropriate. The Dutch parliament will discuss a treaty on military cooperation between the Netherlands and Israel with Defense Minister Ollengren. According to PAX, it is incomprehensible that the Netherlands wants to cooperate with Israel militarily and calls for an end to this cooperation. Israel has occupied Palestinian territory for decades, annexing it, expanding illegal settlements, driving residents off their land and demolishing buildings. This year alone, over 100 Palestinians have been killed. Over and over again, human rights violations and war crimes are committed in the process. The debate in Dutch parliament centers on so-called status treaty, which regulates the legal status of military personnel on each other's territories. But how can the Netherlands justify cooperation with Israeli military responsible for aforementioned crimes? Again, folks, it's not really all that complicated. It is kind of horrifying that they're, you know, coming out like this. I was joking with Alex before the show about like covering up for Israel. And it's like, there is no cover up anymore. They're just doing it. They're just doing it. And they're basically saying you're not allowed to stop them. That's what's happening. There's no cover up anymore. They're sort of just doing it and they want it to happen quietly. But if you find out and are mad against it, what are you going to do? What are you going to do about it? Because they're just going to do it. And they don't care. And you know, they know it's bad for you. That's why they're doing it. So how are you going to appeal to them? Like, wait, no, but we don't want this. It's bad for us. They're like, yeah, we're Germany bombing London. We know it's bad for you. It's not, this isn't a question. It's an attack. It's, but literally we're here suffering under the Blitz and saying, you know, some people say we're being bombed. Yeah, we're being bombed. Yes, we're being taken over. Yes, this is an attack. Yes, it's going to succeed unless you stand up and stop it. No, you cannot ask your attacker to please stop killing you. They're not going to stop killing you. And this merger of the American and Israeli militaries will be the death knell to our sovereignty once and for all. It's barely hanging on by a thread at this point, and these are the scissors to snip that thread. Let's watch this video. This is from the Leia Files, I believe, L-E-A-H on X, talking about how this new bill combining the U.S. and Israeli militaries is probably why all of the Israeli talking heads have been saying, well, we want to separate. We don't want to be dependent on America anymore. It's because they're setting this up. Let's watch.
Our government just tried to merge our military with our greatest ally's military, sneak it into a 1,000-page defense bill, and hope that nobody would notice. I read it, I analyzed it, and I want to tell you what it is, what it isn't, and what we can do. Every year, Congress has this must-pass, must-fund bill. It's the National Defense Authorization Act, NDAA. It's 1,000 pages long. Nobody reads the whole thing. They don't even know what these bills say, which is very concerning. What they did was sneak into it in Section 224 with a fancy name, the United States Israel Defense Cooperation Initiative. It's boring on purpose. When the government tries to make something boring, when they try to bury it in the headlines, whoop, spidey senses go off, and we're going to pay extra close attention to it. And I'm glad I did, because this thing is wild. What it would do is link the U.S. and Israel militaries together at the deepest level that we have done with anybody. We have our Five Eyes partners. We have our partners that we are protecting. This is different. It's joint weapons development, shared military networks, something that they literally call data fusion. And if you know what data fusion is, it's basically what these data centers are that we're building. They're data fusion centers. They're pulling all of the data together. They're not just standalone stovepipe data centers. It basically means that our military's data becomes their military's data. We co-produce weapons together. And the part that not enough people are talking about is that there's one person in the Pentagon overseeing it. And if I had to put money on it, I would think it would be Feinberg. If you know what I think of Feinberg, it's really, really scary. I've done a deep dive on him. You should go check it out. But they're standing up a separate office with a separate budget. That means that it's basically impossible to undo. That is a very important point in this. Let's talk about the problems with it. Right now, we support our greatest ally through aid. Hundreds, billions of dollars of aid. And we can see it. We can see who votes on it. We can see how much they send. Congress does it. And it is out in the open for us to see, make decisions on, vote people out over. But Section 224 takes that money away from being out in the open and puts it in a defense budget that is easily moved through different channels. Trust me. Back rooms of defense contracting is where this will lie. And that, to me, as a money person, says the most of what they're trying to do. Interestingly, Americans are saying no more AIPAC, no more sending money to them. And so they're like, oh, well, let's just stand up an office and call it this. Do they think we're that stupid? There would be almost no public oversight, and the DOD can't even pass an audit. So we'd actually be doing more with them and giving more to them without any of us knowing what. That's scary, especially knowing why I think they're doing this, like their motivations for this, which is all of a sudden a public, hey, we don't want this. Oh, well, then we're going to move it to back channels. This is how we do it. With a country who actually causes more problems than anyone else. And here's the kicker. We don't even do this with our closest treaty allies. When I first saw this, the first thing I thought was, one, what is this? And two, who do we do this with? Because I've never heard of this. And I've spent 20 years in the intel community and for the DOD, unheard of. And so I was like, well, let me check. Maybe we do it somewhere. No, we don't. We don't. We don't do it with the UK. We don't do it with Canada. We don't do it with the countries that we are legally bound to defend. But we want to do it with this one? Red flags. We have no formal defense treaty with our greatest ally. This right here, the financial part, the oversight part, the moving of the money part to these dark back channels, and the fact that the two congressmen who brought this forward, which I'll have to get to in a different one, are all funded by defense contractors and AI PAC. This isn't a small detail in all of this. So let's talk about the ugly, because that wasn't ugly enough. That was just the bad. Two main things jumped out at me that are like, oof. One, it's nearly impossible to undo. An aid package expires, you can let it lapse, you can renegotiate it, it runs out, we can say no. Once you've merged networks and data and weapon systems, you can't just say, no, I don't want to do that anymore. That's infiltration. It's baked into the system permanently. The other one is that this is moving forward right now. This is moving right now. While we are in the Situation Room negotiating this war, and our greatest ally is over here out of Lebanon wanting to take 70% of Gaza, we will be merging with them. No, this is so scary. We know you're up to something nefarious when you're hiding it, when you're burying it in the headlines, when it's happening at the same time as Pam Bondi being on the AI board, as our weapons-grade plutonium going to five private companies, as Peter Thiel moving his family to Argentina, as being in the middle of a war that we can't afford, caused by our greatest ally, and now this. But they're hiding it because permanently fusing our military with our greatest allies' military, especially with the state of the United States and Americans against what they're doing, against our greatest ally, well, putting that up for a vote, they know how we'd vote. Same reason why the shady people in Congress tried to pass the FISA 702 warrantless act at 2 o'clock in the morning. If Americans don't want it, well, we're just not going to tell them about it. And this was their strategy because they don't think we're paying attention. And I don't think they realize the distrust that exists in America right now. Oh, we're paying attention, baby. This is treason, if you ask me. It is about, should the most permanent military entanglement in history exist? Should the greatest power, the United States, merge with anybody? No. No, absolutely not. We have had allies who have become our enemies. We don't have good pickers. It's just like regime changes. We're about to get in bed with a real toxic mofo. Like, what do we have, Stockholm syndrome? So here's what we can do. It's not law yet, so call your congressman. I know you say it doesn't do anything, but call them and make sure they know this is BS and you don't want it. All of them are up for re-election, so we have to at least try. Call them. It takes 60 seconds. Stay.
So, you know, just a... there from the Leia files on X. I think I'm gonna expand the coverage out a little bit. I think I'm gonna cover something in the next segment that I've been carrying around for weeks. I've been carrying it around for weeks, building up the courage to cover it. I think I just received a sign. I think it's time. I think it's time we talked about it. I think it's time we unveiled it. But don't think it's a coincidence that AI is merging with the military the very same time that Israel is merging with our military and Donald Trump is going to China specifically to talk about AI and the military, and he takes a whole bunch of corporate leaders here in America along with him. Yeah, we cannot allow this to pass. This cannot pass. Stay tuned, folks. I think it's going to be a big next segment. I think it's going to be crazy. Share the link.
I'm so excited about the Alex Jones Network. I'm so excited to expand it. The bad guys are in trouble. Hell, we might even get InfoWars back. But who knows? But I couldn't have stood against this tyranny and fought them without your support. But a lot of people, not the majority, but 20-30%, believe the propaganda of the national news that we're off the air. And friends, family, neighbors, people at the gas station, Alex, I'm so sorry you're off the air. I'm so sorry, you know, the Onion runs your company. They didn't get it a year and a half ago with the fake auction. They didn't get it this time. They're blocked in court. They're in a lot of trouble, okay? We're winning, but I need funds for the defense and the offense and for the network and for everything we're doing. And I need your word of mouth to tell your email list, your text message list, your neighbors, your friends, your family. Hey, Alex Jones is verboten, forbidden info. He knows what he's talking about.
Alex Jones called this years ago. Years ago.
Here is the URL, alexjoneslive.com. He's on weekdays, 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. Harrison Smith after that. We're going to bring more shows on, but we need your support. your word of mouth, your prayer. You are everything, and your financial support at alexjonesstore.com. So listen to me. We have ultramethylene blue tincture capsules and now the gummies that are a concentrate of already the strongest best methylene blue. So look out when you get them. But they're selling out, more coming in a month or so. We have plenty of the tincture and the capsules, but not the gummies. If you want them, there's probably 3 or 4 days left of them. Get them now at thealexjonesstore.com. Separately, I can do hours on this. Just go to Wikipedia even. Go to the UN website. Even our enemies admit it. There's an average 15 IQ point reduction in the West because of lack of iodine in the soil and in our foods. Iodine is so good for women, children, adults, pregnant women, but especially older people. But most iodine is a bound iodine to another element. Atomic means on the periodic table, it is pure. We're the only people that put out the pure iodine. And we have it, T3 trifecta iodine, at thealexjonesstore.com. Get yours now. I got my iced tea right here. I take it about every 2 days. I'm going to take a dropper full of this bad boy. And this is so good for your brain, your clarity, your cells. It's essential. If you don't get iodine, you die. Again, you don't have oxygen for 4 minutes, you're dead. Don't have water for 4 days, you're dead. Don't have food for a month or so, most person dies. You know, unless you're super fat and you live 2 months or whatever. The point is, that's because you're not getting all the essential nutrients and vitamins. Iodine is one of the essential things. Look it up. And the number one cause of cognitive disability, officially, for even the World Health Organization, is iodine deficiency. So get yours now at thealexjonesstore.com and be the reason this network continues on and can expand. You're funding folks that fight for your future and our own futures together, trying to stop a new war, trying to stop new pandemics, trying to stop the left, trying to take back civilization. It takes funds to do that. So we sell great products, so it's a 360 win. The only way we fail is you don't take action. Take action now, thealexjonesstore.com.
Today we celebrate the first glorious anniversary of the Information Purification Directive.
Order is the only path to stability.
Compliance is the only path forward.
Alex Jones is a fringe voice and a crackpot.
Our unification of thought is more powerful a weapon than any fleet or army on Earth.
We have created, for the first time in all history, a garden of pure ideology. War is peace.
On May 1st, 2026, Alex Jones will launch his new network. And you will see that the answer to 1984 is still and will always be 1776.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to War Room Live. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, coming to you live on the Alex Jones Network, alexjoneslive.com. Follow us on Rumble and X. And I have to admit, I'm genuinely nervous about the topic I'm about to cover. Like, I'm actually kind of shaking a little bit. But I feel like I have to, and I feel like I've kind of received a sign that I should do this. And I got to start with a little bit of a mea culpa, of an admission that I was wrong for a while, because, and it's sort of similar to what I've said before about 1984, that when I read 1984 in high school, I didn't like it because I didn't think it was believable. I thought it was too far. I thought it was, you know, it's kind of absurd. Like, sure, people are dumb, but they're not going to do the stuff that this book, you know, represents. You get a little older and you go, well, nope, yep, people are that dumb. They are that crazy. 1984 wasn't actually that absurd. It was actually fairly accurate. And I have sort of a similar relationship with this piece of literature in that I read it years ago and thought it was too absurd, thought it was too ridiculous, thought that the absurdity of it, you know, made it not worth talking about or covering. It was clearly a hoax, I think. But in light of certain situations that have developed over the last 2 years, I decided to revisit it. And just like 1984, I've decided this isn't actually absurd. Actually, this makes a lot of sense now, now that I'm looking at it again with fresh eyes. And I actually really started looking into this because of the Eighth Front War. So I did the Eighth Front War little mini documentary. It's gotten over 20 million views at this point. And, you know, I said that if it got to 20 million, then I would do a sequel. So I started working on the sequel to the Eighth Front War. And I thought I would do some research into it. And actually, I had my sister was just telling me a story about basically she has a friend that realized that I was her brother and, you know, was turned out to be a big fan, which is always very fun to see. My sister's telling me, she's like, yeah, he recognized your name. And there was that moment where it's like, wait, that Harrison Smith? And you're like, yes. And they're like, that guy. And what he said was, what he said was that the Eighth Front War, that this video single-handedly changed the Overton window. And not to be too prideful, but I think it has. I think it has. I think that its impact has been incredibly gratifying and perhaps has given me the confidence to do what I'm about to do now. Because if I could change the conversation once, I think I should do it again. So to do the follow-up to the Eighth Front War, I started looking at a little document you may be familiar with. It's called The Protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion. I can hear the crew gasping from the other side. Interestingly, this document has been around for well over 100 years, and yet I don't understand how it could have been written before the last 2 years, since it seems to so perfectly align with everything going on. Now, to actually talk about this, because this has been probably the most maligned, I mean, the FBI will launch investigations over people owning this book. Now, it took me a long time to find this copy. This is, I believe, to be an accurate translation. There are a lot of inaccurate translations out there. It supposedly was written in 1886 or so. Of course, Henry Ford published it, and it's, you know, got very famous for that. Interestingly enough, the person who officially declared it a hoax and debunked it, Alan Dulles. Alan Dulles, before he founded the CIA, was actually the reason that people believed Protocols of the Elders of Zion to be a hoax. Now, in reality, it is a political document. And it is very, very similar in a lot of ways to Machiavelli's The Prince. But it has a different starting point in terms of human behavior, human activity. The Prince, it sort of takes the viewpoint that, like, humans are good and that you have to kind of purposefully be not good to be a good ruler. And that it's sort of teaching the prince, like, it's okay to be bad because at the end of the day, you're being good because people are dumb and can be tricked by bad people, and it's for you to protect them. It has a different starting point. But in a lot of ways, it's a very similar political manifesto. And that is how this should be viewed. And also in the protocols, it is not about a Jewish conspiracy of all Jews. And they actually use the snake as the symbol of themselves. This is one of the things that I go, okay, who is going to go, our symbol is the snake, the wily snake that represents us? It's like, really, who would take that unto themselves? One of the things I was like, okay, sure, this is a hoax. It's a hoax. It was somebody calling Jews snakes, but they wanted to make it sound like Jews were calling themselves snakes. Not very sophisticated. But in reality, what it's saying is that the elders of Zion, the top of this organization, are the head of the snake. And that the Jews are the body of the snake. So they don't know what the head is doing, where it's going, where it's leading them, but they will follow. And that's laid out in these protocols. And again, once I read it, I think you'll, I like, just asking you to give me a second here. Let me read through some of these. And you tell me if you think this is a worthy for discussion in the modern political atmosphere. And again, it sounds absurd. It sounds ridiculous. The way this is written, It sounds like a hoax. It does. I admit that. You tell me if it's wrong. Protocol number one, And supposedly this was the notes of a meeting that took place in the late 1880s, which is another interesting thing to consider because they talk here about the upcoming communist revolution that they're planning. Now, if it's accurate, if the date is accurate, that means they were literally, you know, plotting the communist revolution 20 years before it actually happened. So I don't even know if this is real or not. If this is a hoax, it's one of the most sophisticated and well-informed hoaxes of all time. Protocol number one, it says, putting aside fine phrases, we shall speak of the significance of each thought. By comparisons and destructions, we shall throw light upon surrounding facts. What I'm about to set forth, then, is our system from the two points of view, that of ourselves and that of the goyim, i.e. non-Jews. So again, this is one of the things where when you see Jeff Epstein talking to all of his buddies as, you know, the trillionaires that own all wealth, and they're casually dropping the word goyim, and they're casually referring to the fact that Jews make our money by exploiting the goyim, and these are discussions that they're having in private communications with each other without any caveats, without any, you know, I know you don't like how I talk like this, but, you know, I'm just going to say this anyway. And trust me, I communicate with a lot of racists. Even the most racist people in the world tend to not just be racist with people they don't know if they're not, you know, think you're on the same page too. So the fact that Jeffrey Epstein and his buddies are emailing each other with open disdain for non-Jews, it's like this is just part of their regular, it's part of their understanding that they all believe in. They don't have to preface it. They don't have to test the waters first. They just know. They know they're all on the same page. So again, because of the developments over the last 2 years, from the Epstein list to the war in Iran, things that I previously would have considered ridiculous absurdities instead tend to bear a tinge of truth. And I can't help but want to look more into it. It says, it must be noted that men with bad instincts are more in number than the good, and therefore the best results in governing them are attained by violence and terror. And this is, in a lot of ways, sort of the you know, hypothesis of the entire discussion. They say the best results in governing people are attained by violence and terrorism and not by academic discussions. Every man aims at power. Everyone would like to become a dictator if only he could, and rare indeed are the men who would be willing to sacrifice the welfare of all for the sake of securing their own welfare. Again, we can get into the underlying philosophy here. I tend not to believe that's true. I tend to look around at my friends and family and neighbor and think these people are great. And these people, even if it could benefit them, they wouldn't hurt another person. But that's the mindset at work with these people, is they believe all human beings are just evil, fallen, vicious, envious, and will hurt and destroy you if they can benefit in any way. Because that's their mindset. They project that on everybody else, and they operate off of that. And it comes with disdain and condescension on top of, you know, general hatred. Here's another sort of main theory of this tome. Political freedom is an idea, but not a fact. This idea, one must know how to apply whenever it appears necessary with this bait of an idea to attract the masses of the people to one's party for the purpose of crushing another who is in authority. This task is rendered easier if the opponent has himself been infected with the idea of freedom, so-called liberalism, and for the sake of an idea is willing to yield some of his power. It is precisely here that the triumph of our theory appears. The slackened reins of government are immediately, by the law of life, caught up and gathered together by a new hand, because the blind might of the nation cannot for a single day exist without guidance, and the new authority merely fits into the place of the old, already weakened by liberalism. In our day, the power which has replaced that of the rulers who were liberal is the power of gold. There was a time when faith ruled. The idea of freedom is impossible of realization because no one knows how to use it with moderation. It is enough to hand over a people to self-government for a certain length of time for that people to be turned into a disorganized mob. From that moment on, we get internecine strife, which soon develops into battles between classes, in the midst of which states burn down and their importance is reduced to that of a heap of ashes. Whether a state exhausts itself in its own convolutions, whether its internal discord brings it under the power of external foes. In any case, it can be accounted irretrievably lost. It is in our power. The despotism of capital, which is entirely in our hands, reaches out to a straw to the state, who must take hold of it. If not, it goes to the bottom. Okay, so do you understand what it's laying out? It's saying if you basically tell the people that they, you know, have rights that the government is taking from them, then they will entreat the government to lessen its grip and, you know, be more liberal with them. If the government does that, loosens the reins, as it puts it, the natural, you know, law of power essentially is that power, like nature, abhors a vacuum, and somebody else will come in to, you know, fill it up. And essentially through this process of, you know, making demands, overthrowing the ruling party, putting a new one in, repeat, you know, rinse and repeat, you reduce the state to the point that it can't sustain itself any longer. And they have to, in order to just continue operations, borrow money. Who are they going to borrow money from? The people that have attained the money in their hands in a monopolistic fashion, and who did this over the course of several centuries, the Rothschild family, of course, being the preeminent example. This is the, again, central part of this, and it's repeated over and over. Right is might. Our right lies in force. The word right is an abstract thought and proved by nothing. The word means no more than give me what I want in order that I thereby may have proof that I'm stronger than you. The word power means no more than give me what I want in order that I thereby prove that I'm more strong than you. I'm stronger than you. So again, when I see people, you know, today, you know, Israel is basically carpet bombing Lebanon and have actually come out with a strategy with in which they are saying every one drone that Hezbollah hits us with, we're going to destroy 10 civilian buildings. We're going to, you know, murder 100 people for every drone that goes towards us. And people are, you know, pointing that and going, you know, why is nobody standing up to this? Why is nobody stopping Israel? Why are they allowed to get away with this? Because they have the power. Because they have the power. They can do what they want because they're stronger than you. Might makes right. That's the philosophy that we're seeing at play here. And then point number 15 from the first protocol. This is the one that I think we're living through right now. This is the one that's been rattling around in my brain for weeks as I see the unmasking occur. It says, our power in the present tottering condition of all forms of power will be more invincible than any other because it will remain invisible until the moment when it has gained such strength that no cunning can any longer undermine it. So when you look around and you go, why is Israel being like this? Why is AIPAC being like this? Why is the ADL being like this? Why are they going so mask off? Why is the ADL going out and going, we're not here to stop defamation of everybody. We're here to support the Jews. And why is Israel coming out and basically saying, we don't care, you know, what Americans want. If you oppose us, we will oust your congressman, replace him with somebody who does support us, and you'll learn your lesson that way. I feel like they feel like their strength has now been reached, or as they put it, I think they feel as though they have, quote, gained such strength that no cunning can any longer undermine it, and so it's no longer remaining invisible. So again, this is, you know, maybe the protocols are fake. Maybe they're a hoax. It's pretty shocking that they were able to, you know, sort of predict stuff like this all the way back in the early 19, late 1800s. That's pretty amazing. But does it not reflect what's going on right now? Is it, do you not feel like this is what we're going through? That for the last several decades, slowly but surely, the power has built up behind the scenes, the globalist power, the Rothschild, Rockefeller power. And again, you read these, it's not just, it's not all the Jews and it's not just the Jews, right? They basically say, you know, we elders of Zion, the top Jews, they'll be in charge. They'll get what they want because the body of the snake, the regular Jews, will follow them and listen to them and obey them. And that they'll need, by necessity of just the way the world works, their own agents, non-Jewish agents who are going to help them, will never quite rise to the point of the elders of Zion, but are necessary, a necessary component in, you know, carrying out this operation. And again, it elucidates all this. It lays it out. I just need to read because there's so much. I mean, it's, do you want to see this? Do you want to see how much I've highlighted? Do you want to see how much I've highlighted in this dang tome in this book? I mean, the whole thing is worth looking at. It's all fascinating. So let's keep reading. Out of the temporary evil we are now compelled to commit will emerge the good of unshakable rule, which will restore the regular course of the machinery of the national life brought to naught by liberalism. The results justify the means. So, I mean, how many people defending the actions of Israel have basically quoted that? Look, sure, what we're doing is evil, but out of the evil that we are now compelled to commit, I mean, we're not choosing to do this. We're being compelled to commit this violence. Really, we're the victims. Do you know what they're making us do to them? That's what they say. Out of the temporary evil we are now compelled to commit will emerge the good of an unshakable rule, which will restore the regular course of the machinery of national life brought to naught by liberalism. The results justify the means. And this is an interesting thing. They say the blind cannot lead the blind without bringing them into the abyss, which I'm pretty sure is a quote from the New Testament. But we'll leave that to the side. Consequently, members of the mob, upstarts from the people, even though they should be as a genius for wisdom, yet having no understanding of the political, cannot come forward as leaders of the mob without bringing the whole nation to ruin. So again, this goes back to the idea that just like regular people, if they haven't been instructed in the esoteric occult methods of controlling crowds and running, you know, political machines, then no matter how smart they are, no matter what a big genius they are, they'll fail to be a good ruler because they haven't been instructed in the methods of, as they put it, force and make believe. Force and make believe is their calling card. Force and make believe. That is the way you rule the world. They say only one trained from childhood for independent rule can have understanding of the words that can be made up of the political alphabet. So this is another thing that you see cropping up over and over, as I pointed to many times, not because I was inspired by the Protocols of Zion, but because you see it in evidence all around us, which is interesting because then you go read the Protocols of Zion, you go, oh, that explains it. Oh, this makes sense. I've explained it before, again, from my own observations, as a sort of casual nobility, a sort of nobility or aristocracy with a with component of, I'm blanking on merit, like a merit-based aristocracy where you aren't guaranteed necessarily to inherit the power from your father, but it will be one of the children of the main families that will be appointed this position, and they're all sort of competing to figure out which one of them it is. But it's going to one of them. You know, who's running CBS News? Larry Ellison's son. Who's running digital ID for the UK? Tony Blair's son. Who's running the Soros Foundation? George Soros's son. They've been trained from birth to assume these positions. Anthony Blinken, former Secretary of State for the United States. His stepfather was Jeffrey Epstein's lawyer. It's a family affair. It's a family business. And they're raised with these ideas. And then you've got lines like this. This is one of the things where, again, you read it. When I first read it, and I just thought, okay, it's a hoax. It's got to be a hoax. Who would say stuff like this? Quote, we are despots. Who would just come out and say, we are despots? You know, what does that mean? But then you look at their actions and suddenly the reasoning becomes clear. It is only with a despotic ruler that plans can be elaborated extensively and clearly in such a way to distribute the whole properly among the several parts of the machinery of the state. And again, this is why, you know, when people look at like, why is Bibi Netanyahu allowed to do all of this? I'm pretty sure Bibi Netanyahu is their king. I don't know exactly, but reading this document, I'm like, okay, Bibi, they talk about this king. We're going to have a king and everybody has to listen to him and he has to be a despot and we have to listen and, you know, he's the king. I'm pretty sure Bibi Netanyahu is king of the Jews at this moment. At least that's how they act. So they go on where they, you know, dismiss and talk about the methods in which they will weaken the goyim. Behold the alcoholic animals bemused with drink, the right to an immoderate use of which comes along with freedom. It is not for us and ours to walk that road. The peoples of the goyim are bemused with alcoholic liquors. Their youth has grown stupid on classicism and from early immorality, into which it has been inducted by our special agents, by tutors, lackeys, governesses in the houses of the wealthy, by clerks and others, by our women in the places of dissipation frequented by the goyim. Goes on to say, our countersign is force and make believe. Only force conquers in political affairs, especially if it is to be concealed in the talents essential to a statement. Violence must be the principle, and cunning and make-believe the rule for governments which do not want to lay down their crowns at the feet of agents of some new power. This evil is the one and only means to attain the end, the good. Therefore, we must not stop at bribery, deceit, and treachery when they serve towards the attainment of our ends. Our state, marching along the path of peaceful conquest, has the right to replace the horrors of war by less noticeable and more satisfactory sentences of death necessary to maintain the terror which tends to produce blind submission. Just but merciless severity is the greatest factor of strength in the state. Therefore, it is not so much by the means themselves as to the doctrine of severity that we shall triumph and bring all governments into subjection to our super government. It is enough for them to know that we are too merciless for all disobedience to cease. We shall end liberty. Do you understand what they're saying? They're saying the terror is the point. The illogic is the point, right? Thomas Massie is not an anti-Semite. Thomas Massie doesn't even hate Israel. Thomas Massie hasn't said anything that's offensive about Israel or threatened them in any way. Yet by merely opposing Israel, like he opposes every country trying to get foreign aid, by merely not playing along, they've shown that they're willing to spend tens of millions of dollars to end his career. That's the doctrine of severity. That's an investment so that they don't have to do it over and over again. You do it with a merciless, ruthless, and obsessive energy to one person, and everybody else learns their lesson. That's what they're saying there. It is not so much by the means themselves as by the doctrine of severity that we shall triumph and bring all governments into subjection to our super government. It is enough for them to know that we are too merciless for disobedience to cease. Oh, you want to resist us in Lebanon? Well, we'll bomb entire cities. Oh, some of you wanted to, you know, start a problem with Israel? Well, the rest of you are going to be starved to death, and then we're going to shoot you when you try to get the food that we're providing. It's a doctrine of severity. The purpose is the terror. So we'll move on from this, but we are not even all the way through Protocol 1, and there's about 25 protocols. So if y'all like this, if I should cover this more, if I'm not killed by Israel tonight for exposing this, because this continues to be the most dangerous document in the American language right now, share the link, share these clips. If this gets a lot of, you know, support and views and stuff, I'll do it again. I'll go through this. I'll spend a segment a day on this, going through the whole thing, if that's what y'all want. In the meantime, go read it yourself. It's the Eighth Front War. It's the Protocols of the Elders of Zion. It's the Fifth Column. It's being unveiled because they think they're too strong to be stopped.
Folks, I'm Dr. Bigley. Today's presentation will be about methylene blue and you.
Dr. Bigley, what does methylene blue do?
Great question, Billy. It has to do with your mitochondria, the powerhouse of your cells. Let's bring out the mitochondria now!
Right.
As I was saying, methylene blue supercharges your mitochondria, which does wonders for your mental clarity, stamina, and overall pep. Just look at him go!
Gee, Dr. Bigley, he must have drank a lot of methylene blue. He was bouncing off the walls.
Right you are, Billy. He sure drank a lot. Let's continue, shall we?
Billy, did you know that methylene blue can cure communism?
No, sir. Can I see?
Why, certainly, Billy. Take a look over there.
Behold, Ivan, a Ruski doggedly determined to undermine our way of life. Careful, Billy. He bites. Oh. Look, vodka, potato hooch. Watch. The communism is slowly leaving his body.
Wow, the methylene blue cured the red right out of him.
So, how do you feel?
Gee, Doc, I don't know what got into me. I feel like $1 million now. Say, where can I get some more of that blue stuff in case I become retarded again?
You can find it on the AlexJonesStore.com.
What does .com mean?
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.